This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
So I want to put a question out to you guys, especially because people talked about, people talked about, illnesses, change and relationship issues and all kinds of issues that come up. And these days, more and more, we hear, at least we hear about them or experience some level of, environmental, changes, intense or drastic changes in temperature. I mean, places in the world, there are catastrophes going on, floods that are taking over cities, entire, communities. So for those of us who are here and have lived long enough, you have had experiences of hardship, difficulty, things that were unexpected, things that happen out of the blue. Somebody dies out of a sudden. There is an accident out of a sudden, or a job is lost all of a sudden that you weren't expecting, or this disloyalty shows up when you were not expecting, So I want to ask you guys, so because this topic of resilience is, percolating everywhere. We need more resilience. And I actually, because of my class, I looked up the definition that's out there about resilience. And Psychology Today explains resilience is the psychological quality that allows some people to be knocked down by the adversities of life and come back at least as strong as before, rather than letting difficulties or traumatic events or failures overcome them and drain their resolve. Highly resilient people find a way to change course, emotionally heal, and continue moving towards their goals. So, I wanted to kind of put this out and see how have you do you think of yourself resilient? Because difficulty is happening. It's in our lives. We may be in the thick of it, or it might have been in the past, or who knows, it may come. And so we have to go through these things. If we don't die, we just live through it. The question is, how much suffering is accompanied by going through this difficulty? How much resistance, how much not liking, how much fear, worry, anxiety is accompanied this? And so just maybe put a question out to people. What is this resilience about? Do you think you have it? How do you use it? I mean, according to that definition, it's like a comeback. Lift yourself up and go through it. I have a different kind of a vision for resilience, but before that, I thought maybe we open it to people, either type in the chat or come on the microphone or video and say, what do you think of this? Do you have it? Do you not have it? How do you go about dealing with difficulties in life? And you could take a couple of minutes, think about it, and just, well, as soon as you're ready, raise your hand, or either physical hand or digital hand, and come on, or just type in the chat. Yes, go ahead, Suzanne.
I think I'm pretty resilient, but the thing that I struggle with is that I sort of have a coat of armor, and shield myself, from, I don't shield myself from difficulty so much, but it's, I have sort of like a tough, harder outer shell. And so sometimes it's difficult to feel in the moment or feel, allow myself to feel vulnerable to, to things as a result of, being pretty sturdy and powering through things. So that's kind of my difficulty, but mindfulness really helps, I think, with sort of the softening and the, the loving kindness and allowing myself to be vulnerable, because I think in some ways being vulnerable is important to becoming, acknowledging vulnerability is an important part of being truly resilient, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so you're describing to find a balance between kind of like shield and that may go towards disconnection from life and people and all that, to opening and allowing and still be protected. It's tough. Look, it's not easy to be human. Yeah, good job. It's not easy. That's the first thing to, for us to even, acknowledge that this is, I need to really protect myself. And then I also need affection, attention, love, and I want to give it and be present and all that. How do I do both where I can be still secure and safe? Yeah, good. So, one of the things that just occurred to me is there's a teaching called the highest blessings. The highest blessings, where this deva or like an angel comes to the Buddha and says, so all our devas are concerned with suffering and unhappiness, and so is humankind. Lord Buddha, what are the highest blessings? Like, what do you recommend? What do you suggest? And the first two lines that he says is avoid, first thing is avoid those of foolish ways. Foolish means, they're unskillful, they're not mindful, they're not skilled in, kindness or wisdom or communication or good boundaries, or they're bothersome. They're gonna create problems. So he says, avoid those of foolish ways. The second line is associate with the wise. The wise usually has a good heart too, and is capable of discerning how to respond and how to be in a way that is not harmful, that is compassionate towards themselves and other people. So when you associate with these people, one, you learn from them, two, you're secured with them. You don't have to worry about them, doing harmful things. And then of course he goes down a list of, living in suitable kind, in places of suitable kind, taking care of your parents and loved ones, and on it goes to what are the highest blessings. But then, so this protection thing you're talking about, I assume is not from non-human stuff, is mostly from humans. So, well, these days, AI is something that could harm us. So that's something to be, aware about. And so we can kind of not put all of the work on ourselves, but notice what's happening in the environment and what are the conditions that take away my security, and also changing environmental conditions like people or things around and of that nature. Is that helpful? I mean, I'm generally kind of addressing something general.
Yeah. I think it's helpful. It just feels like there's a lot of foolishness
Yes.
going on right now. Like the world is being managed by foolishness. And so, finding the wise ones
Yes.
is key, I guess.
Yeah. So, and also, this is important for us to know that wise, according to us, it could be a little problematic because then the other sides also they think they're wise and they have their own community of wise people. You know what I mean?
Right.
So truly, this is why when I say I have a different vision of resilience, and I know there's really nice typed in the text and I'll read them. But my vision of resilience is developing capacities, developing strengths and qualities and skills within ourselves so that one, we don't break down in the face of adversity, at least not as bad. We get, we may get a little bit disoriented and or shocked or something, but quickly we can come back to stability. We don't break down as bad. Two, we ourselves, through our own thoughts and actions, don't cause catastrophes. What could seem like a catastrophe to us, like relationship issues or financial problems or the neighbors or things that are bad for us, we don't cause them ourselves, right? Using, consuming in ways that are not good for us. And three is that we have a vision of a happy or well life that we really aspire, constantly aspire and work towards that. To me, that is a reliable, preventative sort of a resilience instead of after the fact coming back. Like one of you, David says, resilience is the ability to weather adversity through endurance and adaptability, bending without breaking. Beautiful, but it's all words. How do I do that? How do I do that? This is great. So developing qualities where you can be flexible, that you are not so rigid and stuck with your, because look, for example, this theme of the other side, those who are managing, the kind of big theme of this thing that it's just horrendous, it's just horrible, and it's just causing. I mean, look, I'm Persian, I'm Iranian. Yes. Okay, so. But in our mind, when we catastrophize something, that it may be true or not true, and we separate, we become rigid, the fact of rigidity is not adaptability, is not flexibility, is not able to endure. Because of our belief system or the way we are concluding as this is absolute right. What I'm thinking is absolute right. And again, I'm not, challenging anybody's perception about a specific thing, but in general, right? And so this is something to be aware of, that when we are practicing these mindfulness qualities, we are preventing a lot of the difficulties that could come, at least in our own, sphere of sort of influence. And then when something that is completely out of our control happens, that is just, it shakes everything up for us, we don't become so shaken up. This is you've all heard about equanimity, right? Equanimity practice is a component of resilience. that I would like to, think about like that. And then somebody else says, I am resilient. I tell myself to just take it one day at a time, one small step at a time. Then I can feel even a small sense of improvement in the situation. So being able to be with and not catastrophize, and making things one step or one sort of a thing at a time. Like, for example, I had gone to the doctor about, oh, my foot is getting numb. My foot, why is my foot numb? I've had my hand go numb, my wrist, carpal tunnel, stuff like that. Okay, so don't go to Google, right? Everybody knows not to Google amputation. It leads to amputation. The foot is going to be cut off, right? So I'm like, oh no, I'm not going to have a foot cut off. I need to get to the bottom of this, right? So I go to the doctor and he says this and that. And I say, doctor, I really mobility, movement, walking, it's important. I need to get ahead of this. So he does some blood tests and then he says to me, okay, well, we didn't intend to, but now through the blood test, we have found this other thing that is way, way, way more, kind of like, okay, we need to pay attention to this. And, it could be an untreatable cancer, right? So for a moment, like, what the hell? And he went out to do something. By the time he went out, I noticed this incredible lowering of my energy, positive energy, like life energy. Nothing has happened. I'm not dead. There is no diagnosis of cancer. There is nothing going on. There is this possibility of the ending of life, right? So I noticed how much I went lower, and immediately I thought about a one person particularly that they're going to be affected. Oh no, when I die. Oh, I thought of that, and then I thought of my kid, and then I thought, and then I come back, manager, gather yourself, come back. And I just was breathing and breathing. And all of a sudden, because I did not engage or indulge. Once you indulge in sorrow and those feelings, watch out. There may be no end to it. It's a deep, deep hole. You may fall as go down that call it rabbit hole or whatever. So as soon as I recognized it, another thing I thought came up. Oh my God, how amazing. Oh wow. If I know that I have such and such certain amount of time, what a gift. What a gift. I can just completely, wow, what a gift. And I just, my mood changed. Everything changed. And the doctor came in and I said, so how long do I have? He said, oh my God, we haven't even. No, I'm sending you to this specialist and that specialist. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. So I go to the specialist. The specialist is very serious. He wants to do biopsy. I don't want to do it. Okay, figure it out, right? Now it's like things on my list of things to do. I can't just do nothing about it. I got to go figure it out. So, okay, I'll go to this, I'll go to, no, I have vasovagal, I can't do biopsy, I'm gonna faint, another complications is. So I'm sharing this with you because it's not a shame. It's not a shame to have an illness of the body. This body will fall apart. It's supposed to fall apart. It's not supposed to stay, like a mountain. Even like a building lasts longer than our bodies, or this Persian carpet I have over there could last generations after my body is fallen apart. So these are some things in the resilience, in the building or being resilience of being aware of reality, knowing things as they are and not fighting this incredible grand design of nature. You're gonna lose, you fight it. There's no winning to fight nature. We might as well see it. How many millions and millions and millions of people, or thousands, or hundreds, or tens of people we know who have died? Dolly Parton died. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Okay, why not? You know? I mean, I feel bad, of course, for people who are left behind. But as soon as that person is dead, and a little bit of talk about them, a little bit of rituals and gatherings and stuff, it's done, right? We're not thinking about them anymore. Of course, if it's, blood related or very close loved ones, that's different. But what I mean is that being realistic, objective about nature of life and how it governs us can do an incredible amount of bring us benefit. And so then with it comes anxiety, fear, all of that. And then we notice that, oh, it's not always there, this anxiety or fear or sorrow. It's not always there. Sometimes it's not there, you know? And so we just continue to expand the heart of compassion. The moment you think of somebody else as horrible, notice what happens to you. Your immune system gets impacted. Your mood, your life gets impacted. They're not even here. There's nothing we can do in this moment. But in this moment, I got inflicted out of nowhere. This is very, very useful practice. Self-compassion is about that. Noticing and not being okay with self-inflicting, or just, when you don't have to be upset or you don't have to be in pain, to not be. So catching yourself. Yuna says, connecting with this mindfulness community is a social recovery for me. That's beautiful. The experience helps me build resilience week by week. Excellent. Yeah. Yes. Well, thank you, Pam. Did I read anywhere? Definitely. Okay. Pam says, definitely have resilience after living in three different countries and adjusting to job loss on both my husband's side and my own. I just moved through and I'm now looking forward to retiring. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And then let's see. Tarek says, I've spent a long time battling hardship. And what I've come to learn is that no matter what happens, it will always work out in the end the way it's supposed to. I've learned to let a lot from what I've been through. So I try to turn my focus to the to that whenever I'm challenged again. What can I learn from this? Yes. Oh my God, it's not easy to be human. We're always having to learn. These other animals, they got it easy. They go become a lion. They go become a lizard. They go become a cockroach. What? Why? Why do we have it so, not standard and not easy? Yeah, to me, resilience isn't about coming back stronger, but rather coming back at all. Yeah. So let's really think about these qualities of, so if you think about two, if you were only to develop and care for two assets in your life, two personal assets that we all have it. Nobody not doesn't have it. We all have it. One is your attention, developing your attention. And the second one is your body. Being with your body, knowing your body, caring for your body, understanding the body, allowing the body to not be, perfect, to not be, to not last forever, but caring for it. So someone asked for my book. It's not, I'm gonna just put the name here. It's not easy to be human. And it's really the book is about it's comprehensive. It's really comprehensive. And I started, it took me 5 years to write the book. And I started by calling it Mindfulness Is Not Enough. Mindfulness is not enough. Because I kept teaching all these courses year after year after year. I have people today, some of the people were saying they've been with me 11 years. One person at least was 19 years. So, okay. So they like it. They come back. We have constantly, courses and teaching and learning. And then I realized, no matter how good they become with self-compassion and mindfulness and other compassion and wisdom and all that, they're still hateful towards the gophers. They still have anxiety from the government. It's not this era. It's all these eras we've been in the past, So there is more anxiety. So I realized, okay, there's this mindfulness thing. Even look, I'm a very deeply practitioner of Buddha's teachings, not Buddhism. But the teachings, very deep. I am very, very, I check it out. I practice all of it. And I don't know, gone to the, I don't know, 19, 10-day retreats. So it's not that I don't know about the entire path of the Buddha's teachings. I know it. And I realize this enlightenment thing is far. It's distant. It's not, it's, you can, you don't know. Do you have it? Do you not have it? When do you get there? How do you know you have it? And it's not achievable because there are some things missing. So in the book, 5 years compilation of 60 lessons that I counted, there's more lessons, but 60 of them I numbered. And I organized them into some are systemic, which nature governs all of it, and then systems that we create. What are the issues and what to do about them? Some are about our planet and our relationship to resources, natural resources. We've become more and more disconnected from natural nature and its resources as we become more modernized, digitalized, industrialized, all of that. We have lost sense of that we are a part of nature. We are nature. A car is a nature. We've lost that. So, some of the lessons are under the domain of the planet and living, with resources. And then the rest of the lessons are in the human domain. So systems, planet and human. Human, the brain, the mind, the suffering, the happiness, the actions, the heart, the relationships, the self-love, the other love, all of these different aspects of it, and also trauma and self-healing and boundaries and lots of different lessons. And then, but the hallmark of the book is not just its lessons. Anybody could say them. Everybody has said them. I'm not bringing anything that nobody has said before. What I've done is compile them. But the hallmark is a five stage of developing these, acquiring these qualities and skills. And as you acquire them, this idea of resilience, half of the issues, half of the hardness of issues just fall away. I should say more than half. A big part of the what we experience as difficulty just falls away. What's left is the thing as it is, the actual thing. Right now, this is how it is. Right now, this is how it is. And what do I do? What are my choices? What are my options? What is effective for me to do? That is so important for us to know. Not to mo be upset about why it's like this. It shouldn't be like this. It is like this right now. What are you going to do? What can you do? What's effective to do? Right? So that's what's in my book. I'm putting three links in the chat. One is my resilience course that I started this morning, but you could still sign up to it. And there's another one just like this starting next Thursday night. This is morning, the other is night, so it's same course two times. And then there is a session I'm providing for people with ADHD with a psychiatrist who is going to come in and answer medication questions. You know, all kinds of new medications and their benefits, their drawbacks, their side effects. People are always thinking, and because she's a psychiatrist, I guess people can ask other questions too regarding psychiatric medications. That's on Saturday the 12th. And on the 13th, I don't have the link with me. Maybe Serena can put it on the thing. On the 13th, I'm offering a half a day retreat for people with ADHD through UCLA Mindful on the 13th. So it's a Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., which I highly recommend. Even if you don't have ADHD, attend so you can learn. And these practices are not like, oh, exclusively for people with ADHD. No, these are modified and customized, but everybody could benefit. And then the next link I'm putting is my book. So everything is in one chat right now. Let me see if I can find the UCLA. Art of Thriving. I can easily. Any questions or comments? Time is almost up. We got about 7 minutes. If anybody has a question or comment, okay, I found the UCLA retreat, the half-day retreat. I deleted it. Why? Okay, so yeah, I'm glad you're here. This is great. Any comments or questions? Oh, yeah, thank you, Serena. We did, yeah, for the any topics you would like to hear about here covered? Oh, good. Yeah. It's always good to be here with you all. And I mean, I could keep talking, but I'd like to give people a chance to either share or ask a question. Yeah, peace. We like to talk about peace. Yeah, peace. What a concept. Beautiful concept. Yeah. Peace is beautiful. And once you taste it, or the more you taste it, the more your brain would opt to want it. So experience it in nature, experience it in letting go of something, you know, ex an expectation. You know, one thing, one of the teachings that was very helpful to me during one of those 10-day retreats was three things. So the way it would be, the teacher would give us a teaching and some things to reflect on while we go meditate, right? And this teaching was about there are three things that takes our peace away, three factors. One is clinging, attachment. So that may be easy to know. The second one is conceive, like comparison, comparing yourself or another with something different, something better, something less, something worse. There are nine ways that you can lose your peace. If you think you are equal to somebody, you may not be equal to somebody. It's going to lead to suffering. If you think you are better than somebody, but maybe you're not better than somebody, it's going to lead to suffering. If you think you're worse than somebody and they're better than you, may lead to suffering. If you think nine, right? There are three things: worse, better, or equal. In any way you look at it, once you're engaged in this kind of a thinking, you're not going to have peacefulness. But the third one that was so subtle and so incredibly useful was views and opinions. Engaging in with views and opinions of yourself. There, you lose your peace quite easily. So at that retreat, I see that we have like 4 minutes, maybe I could say the story. At that retreat, I remember, they would give us a chore, like a small little half an hour, something to take care of. And there was this woman who had been given the chore to wash to put the towels from the kitchen, towels that they would use to dry the dishes or something, towels into the laundry. And dry them, fold them, whatever. And there was a specific period of time for everybody to do their chore. Let's say it was 10 a.m. or something. And oh my goodness, this woman all day long, she was doing this all day long. So I'm walking, doing my walking meditation, and I'm thinking, why is she doing that? She's not supposed to be doing that right now. What kind of a retreat on Oh my goodness. And I'm like so hung up on she's doing it wrong and this is disturbing me and I cannot focus and she keeps going and coming and doing this. And all of a sudden I remembered what the Ajahn had said, views and opinions. I thought, oh my God, it's not her, it's my views of her, my opinion of this. I have something to think, it's not my business. Has nothing to do with me. My work, my retreat, it has nothing to do with me. Why do I have an opinion about her practice? Hey, what time is she doing this? And as soon as I was able to identify that, which was sounded pretty justifiable to myself. Yes, it was a good thought. It was an important thought to me. As soon as I saw that, oh my God, that's an opinion or view. Oh, wow, really? It just, boom, boom, it went away and I found peace. I found peace. I had no more to dwell on. And so after that, I realized, oh, that's horrible. I have been kind of feeling it, like negative towards her. So I made her the object of my loving kindness meditation. I kept sending her, may you be peaceful. May you be peaceful. Because I could see she's restless. May you be peaceful. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you enjoy your retreat, this and that. And then at the end of the retreat, where silence was broken and we were passing each other in the dormitory, taking our, packing and stuff, I came across her. And when I saw her, I said, "Oh, that's great. You did you have a good retreat? I hope you enjoyed yourself." And she said, "No, I was in pain the whole time. And in order for me to be okay, I had to keep moving. I had to." Oh my God, can you imagine? And my heart just thought, wow. So really, these opinions and views not only harm us, but also disconnect us. This protection thing that you're talking about. If you can reroute your thoughts, your views and opinion, just maybe drop them or reroute them to maybe there is a good reason for this. I don't know. You know, maybe there is something else going on. I don't know. And get yourself off the hook of the responsibility to having this view and opinion. You're not responsible to be judging the neighbor or their dog or someone who's snoring next door. Or you're not responsible to be upset. Okay. I think we had a good day together. What don't you think? Okay. All right. So yeah, if you need anything, reach out to me. My email is manajay@perfectlyhere.org, which is my nonprofit, or my Gmail. You could this is fine. Or my Gmail is manajaymhere@gmail.com. Okay. Be well. Do something you love to do. Do it frequently. Don't harm yourself or others, but do something you love to do, okay? Right now, after you hang up, go do something you love to do and do it as many times as you can. Don't neglect yourself. Good job. All right. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.